Welcome to episode 202 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Fremantle Dockers club legend Matthew Pavlich about footy and his foray into the sports startup world with Pickstar.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who loves the sports geek life, even with 4 a.m. wake-up calls, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callinan, and you are listening to Sports Geek. And yes, part of Sports Geek life is getting up at crazy hours. Although when I did write that intro for DJ Joel, I did second guess myself because really, who does really have wake-up calls? It really sets the alarm. But I've had a couple of 4 a.m. wake-up calls or alarm sets this week, both in from a travel sense, heading up to Sydney, and then a few meetings with people in different parts of the world, which requires me to get up early in the morning, which I'm more than happy to do so. As always, you can contact me via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or via Twitter, @SeanCallinan or @SportsGeek will get me. At Sean Callinan in Sports Geek Nation as well. As always, happy to chat to podcast listeners to see how we can help you, whether it be working on a campaign, helping you value your assets, working through the digital to dollars process that I'm going to be doing at Seat very shortly. Please get in touch either via those channels above that I just spoke about. Above. I'm reading the notes, but you're listening to a podcast. Is it really above? Probably the word is earlier, but otherwise you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/work. Really happy to catch up with Matthew Pavlich, for those of you who aren't Australian and don't know the name, don't recognise the name. Pav is an AFL legend, 353 games for the Fremantle Dockers, and a longtime club captain, multiple All-Australian representative. So it was good to catch up with him, talk about his footy career, but then also the transition out of it and how he has found his feet post-footy career, and talking about some of the businesses he's involved with, and one of them being Pickstar. So I hope you enjoy this chat with Matthew Pavlich. Very happy to be here on a sunny Melbourne morning here at Sports Geek, and very privileged to have Matthew Pavlich, 353 game player for the Fremantle Dockers, 9 years club captain, six-time All-Australian. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
For the people who don't know, and I've probably shortened your intro there, club champion at Fremantle Dockers and now 18 months out of the game, mm-hmm. 17 years in AFL. Footballer for the people who are listening in Europe and in the US. Take us back to when you started footy,
yep.
And you know, those first couple of months, and sort of when you know were just getting started and what footy was like way back then.
Well, are we talking about when I first picked up a ball and started kicking it around the house at home at Kippen Park in Adelaide? Or are we going when I first got drafted?
It's a long story. It is a long story. Let's go to the draft process, because I did catch up with, you know, Paul Marsh of the AFL Players, yes, and talk about how, yep, the draft process and how it's so big now. You know, what was it like when you were drafted?
Yeah, well, it certainly changed. Probably like most things in sport and life, they evolve and they change. My experience. So I played, like most kids in Australia, sort of cricket and footy and a variety of sports growing up. Footy became a bit more prominent at the back end of my schooling.
Yep.
In year 11, I was able to nominate for the draft as a 16-year-old. My birthday is the 31st of December, so New Year's Eve.
Well, my brother is going to be absolutely excited. He literally called me because I said I was speaking, yeah, to you, and his birthday is the same.
Oh, we shared the same. I always get asked, oh, is it a good thing? I say, yeah, it's a great thing because everyone's on holiday, they're in party mode.
Yep.
Like, it's a great time to have a party. I think, yep, people immediately think, oh, it's like Christmas, people forget, yep, your birthday.
So my brother has been for a good 25 years been complaining,
yeah,
that because if he was born on January 1, it changes the whole restrictions, especially at lower level footy, you know, in that junior footy.
Well, so I think initially when I was younger, I felt that that was hindrance to my, you know, like, geez, I'm playing against all these kids that are older than me.
Yep.
But if I look back, it was a great thing because, you know, there were kids and guys I was playing against who were almost 12 months, 11 months, 10 months older than me. And it forced me to, you know, really have to battle and compete and not be overly successful early on. And it sort of made you play at a higher level. So I think that was, really important.
The landscape of AFL football definitely changed, you know, increased media, increased coverage, a bigger national competition, the players having a bigger say, and it's a big part of what, you know, your career being part of the AFLPA.
Yep.
You were part of the leadership and the president there.
Yep.
What was it like from a player's perspective as those changes came in?
Oh, look, I think, you know, I remember when I first started, you know, you could get a grant to receive a computer and you could get grants to go and do study, you know, which that was basically what the PA was there for, as well as some other fundamental matters being an independent body, but for the players. But I mean, it's just with the game just grown astronomically, really, about what the AFLPA has done for the players, you know, how it strongly advocates for them. You know, you think about the new CBA that we negotiated with the AFL last year, true partners with the game, we grow or fall with the game. So, you know, you think about off the field, there's a player governance committee now with regard to player development. So it's all encompassing. You know, the staff there's grown from sort of, I think when I started, probably a dozen. There's almost sort of 40 or 50 there now. So, it's no surprise that the players, not only their voice or their stance in the game has grown along with the AFLs.
And definitely, I guess, with the increased media, you know, with dedicated channels, more football shows you can poke a stick at, especially going through that CBA and those negotiations, and there was a bit of standoff and, you know, you're looking at, you know, what's happening internationally. You know, the NBA has lockouts and you know, the players' union and the movement of that. There was a real strong collective amongst the players and real strong connectedness because of things like digital and social. You're able to converse a little bit more than in previous years.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when one of the main, there was 10 items or 10 agenda items that we wanted to achieve. The number one, obviously, being, you know, true partners and sharing in the revenue of the game, and setting that to a standard, putting a benchmark on that with regard to percentage. And all the other things were really important, but when you ask the players about, it's not necessarily the money in the pocket, but it was more about the, we are true partners. It's that partnership with the AFL and the clubs. And, you know, quite obviously, lockouts or strikes or however you want to term them was so far down the path.
But
it's obviously something you can use along with all the collective 850-odd players. There's real unity and strength with that. And so with the various platforms and whether it's social media or all the shows or whatever it is, there's a lot of content that can be created that can push the message out in a really positive manner.
Yep.
For both the AFL and the players to achieve an outcome. And yes, there was some standoffs, like any negotiation, you know, it's sort of a bit like a dance, you know, between two parties, sort of first moves, and then you sort of see where it all lays out, and then you finally get the rhythm and the motion going. So it was unbelievably successful in the end.
Yep.
Took a long time, and both parties had to move a bit, but that's, as I said, a part of a normal negotiation. And for me, is, you know, at the back end of my career and then obviously in the early part of my retirement, to be involved in that was so, you know, important for my development, sort of to be in the room with some pretty heavy hitters.
Yep.
I've got a good relationship with Richard Goyder, the chairman, through my wife's family. So, you know, sort of having those personal relationships as well certainly helps to have the conversations that needed to be had. So it was a really enlightening process.
And it's really important because the target goes on the stars of the game and the leaders, and they're like, you know, and the conversation, the narrative is that, but it's the 850. It's the guys on, you know, on the list that are 40 to 45, the rookie listed guys raising their minimums. Yeah. Like some of that stuff's important stuff because they might only be in the game for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we all focus on the top end, you know, all the stars getting paid X amount or whatever. But if you think about the stats that each player will probably last about just under 6 years on an AFL list. You know, the median wage is still less than 300 grand. You know, players, I think 75% of players come out of the game with some type of significant injury that they need to manage post their career. So if you're only averaging, I've sort of had a view for a fair while that, you know, I went to, so I was fortunate to balance my football and study at university. And I was fortunate I had a 17-year career, but if I'd had an average career, so call it 5.5 years, I think I would have been far behind my contemporaries that I went to school with because they would have been to university, they would have achieved their trade, they would have got their apprenticeship, and they would have already had their head start. I might have had a few extra bucks in the back pocket and potentially, you know, started on a home and all that kind of stuff, but I would have been behind them because I might have only been a year through university as compared to them already starting their professional careers. So that's the sort of stuff that you don't hear about.
No.
And that, you know, a lot of those numbers and stats are important for us or for the players because you could start selling that through those various channels, platforms that I think started to shift the argument our way a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. People look at, oh, a 24-year-old's getting this much money and they're trying to compare them with other 24-year-olds. Yeah. But, you know, a 29-year-old that's coming out of the game, you know, is then looking for a job and and they don't have, you know, the experience and that kind of thing. So,
and look, you know, we talk about the transition out of the game so much because it is important. And, unfortunately, there's some really bad stories with athletes transitioning out of the game and finding it really challenging. But, you know, it's sort of how do they transition in? It's their time in the game. It's what they do. And then the transition out. So it's not just I think we get caught up on, you know, what someone's earning, how long they earn that for, what they're doing with the money, rather than just let's be really specific on the transition in, the time in, and the transition out.
So the transition piece, it's not, you know, I've retired, I've done my lap of the ground, or wave to the fans and open up and go, well, what do I do next? It starts before that.
Absolutely.
When did outside footy interests, you know, you've talked about study and another business, when did that start for you? When did you start going, you know, I've solidified my place in the team, I'm starting to feel comfortable as a footballer. Mm. When did you start looking out to say, oh, I'm also interested in these things?
It might sound self-indulgent, but I think I always thought about it even
as you started
day one. Yep. Yeah, because I love footy and I wanted to be an AFL player, but I think I was pragmatic to understand that, you know, it may not last forever. And I wanted to be seen more than just an athlete, more than a footballer. And so, you know, whether that was mum and dad's upbringing or my mates or whatever it was, but that was certainly a focus.
Yep.
So that's why I did go to university and study. And that's why, you know, I continue that throughout my career and have different interests. But obviously, as a young athlete, you're just so keen to impress. So that certainly took the forefront of my mind. But, but in the back of my mind, there was always a thought about, okay, you need to consider, you know, what else is out there.
So as an athlete, and especially in a town like Perth, which is a, you know, beautiful town, but it's one of the most isolated cities in the world.
The most isolated, I think. Yeah,
because it's just so far away from everywhere. Like, you know, there's two main footy teams in Perth. So there's lots of opportunities that come at you. So how do you go picking your way through like the backslappers and, hey, Pav, you should do this, you should be part of this, as opposed to following the things that you're potentially interested in?
A good bullshit radar is pretty handy.
Yeah.
How you develop that and how, whether that's innate or you just
or you pick have a life lessons along the way.
So I guess when you think about my investments, my business interests or whatever it is, made some really good decisions, made a couple of bad ones, probably not unlike an AFL career. You play some good games, you play some bad ones, and that's how it works. So, it's a good bullshit radar is important. I think, you know, the backslappers or the people that are just hanging on.
Yep.
You know, I just never – just never really had much time for them, to be frank and short. But the people that were genuine, they wanted to build a relationship, they obviously had some business acumen and had some smarts behind them. You absolutely engage them and you know, hopefully it's like anyone you meet, you know, you go in with an open mind because you just never know what could come your way. So I think I certainly developed that. I think I keep my cards pretty close to my chest, but always go into a meeting with someone as a really open mind to think, well, who knows where this may develop.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things when I'm talking to athletes and, you know, talking about social and digital, you know, and they're saying, how do I increase my Twitter or Instagram followers and things like that? And I said, here's what you can do. It increases, it becomes an asset for yourself. But I'm always saying LinkedIn's quite valuable in that space. Yep. Like, you don't have to go and be spruiking yourself and stuff, but all of the people, all the backslappers, all the business cards you get, it doesn't hurt to connect with them because they're going to follow your career. And then when you do put your hand up and say, oh, I'm interested in this, you don't know who's out there and what impression you've made for them to say, oh, I'm willing to help you, or I'm happy to have a coffee, or where it might go.
I think athletes a lot of the time are quite self-conscious, I think, and sometimes don't understand that, you know, just sending an email or giving someone a call that you thought may have been of value, you know, they would be more than happy to give up half an hour for a coffee and who knows where that can develop. So I've always been quite happy to get on the front foot, drop an email, you know, say, can we catch up and see where that develops. And it certainly helped throughout my career and, you know, presenting investment opportunities, but also, you know, sort of that business sense and that network's really important.
And then it's just a matter of not spreading yourself too thin,
of course,
on all of these opportunities, because it's like, oh, I've got to do that and that and that, and it's like, well, my primary job is being a footballer and performing on the field, and so it has to fit into that into that space.
Compartmentalizing such a it's a bit of a throwaway cliche line, but it is so important to be able to, you know, dedicate, you know, you let's say your bucket is 80% full of football or athletic requirements, and then so you've got another part of your bucket that's social and business or study, or you just need to be able to, you know, chip away at that throughout a career. We'll go and catch up with that person next week's not possible, but, you know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks' time is. So it's just it's a matter of filling the bucket, so not that it overflows, but that it's full enough with all those opportunities that you're presented with.
So how has the bucket changed in the last 18 months? Because you've taken away football, which gives so much structure and, you know, these are the days I've got off and these are the days I've got in recovery and, you know, that kind of thing. And then you take that out.
I was great to start with.
Yeah.
It was really good to start with. After 17 years of such a structured, disciplined life and the knowledge of a routine and what it looks like, the first 6 months – where, you know, my wife and I and our young family, so we had our third child, William, just after I retired, a couple of weeks after I retired. Yep. So it was, now we need 6 months here to check out and almost recalibrate.
Yeah.
Just sort of – and look, you know, my wife will say that I didn't have enough time out.
Yeah.
I get a bit restless. I get a bit – you know, I'm sort of quite eager to get out and see what's the next challenge, what's out there. But it was important for us to recalibrate, you know, get a sense of there is no routine, there is no structure, check out of –
because so much would have been around your
– absolutely.
Your routine, everything moved
and
around.
And athletes are selfish.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm happy that – I'm happy to admit it, even though it's not a great thing, but absolutely when I was playing and maybe some elements have flowed over to post my career, that I was selfish because I had to – make choices, make decisions that would be at the detriment of others.
Yep.
And so, you know, my wife and my family and my mates around that understood that and I'm so grateful for that. But it was nice to do that for a little period. But then, as I said, I sort of get itchy feet, so I was pretty keen to get moving on a few of the things that I had, you know, set up while I was playing, both from the business perspective but also from media stuff as well.
So what's your week look like now?
I was going to say relatively structured, but it's fluid enough.
Yeah.
So a bit like the bucket analogy before, I've got media commitments with Channel 9 in Perth a couple of nights a week. Got some commitments on the weekend with Fox, obviously calling some games. And then amongst that, you know, I try to have sort of two or three days in the office doing some stuff with both PMY and Pickstar, two businesses I'm involved with. And I try to have sort of because of the weekends with the games and obviously weeknights at the moment with the young family, I try to have sort of Monday mornings and Tuesday mornings off with the family.
Yep.
The two boys have swimming on a Tuesday morning, so I get along there to see them swim and get involved with them. My daughter plays, you know, tennis and hockey, so I try to see as much of that as I can. So it's a balance. It's a bit tricky.
Because you can now.
Because like I can, exactly, yeah.
That's the one of the big shifts. And, you know, you still got to have your – because you're still working in footy, you've still got to have your weekends on other days.
Yes, correct.
Because you're travelling or going to games and calling them. So there's still that structure, but, yeah, you've got to make sure there's that space for family.
And you sort of talked about it before. Because it was so structured and disciplined routine, to have some flexibility and some in the program, for want of a better term, in my week now is really important, to say, yep, I'm travelling this week, but you know what, I'm going to take – all the Thursday off because I haven't seen the kids for a while or whatever it is.
Yep.
That's gold. And having that was always a focus for Lauren and I, my wife and I, to be able to make those choices, particularly in the first couple of years of retirement from sport.
So you talked about Pickstar. I've caught up with Beggs and Monty a couple of times here and they've shown me through the system. Take us through, you know, one, the Pickstar story a little bit because it's had a few – you know, twists and turns or pivots, as it says in the, you know, as they say in the startup world. How did that start?
Well, really, it started over a cup of coffee with James Begley. So Beggs and I, in a different life, it seems now, played football against each other back in Adelaide.
Yep.
Two Adelaide boys. And we played against each other. He was a couple of years older. He got drafted, I got drafted, he came to Melbourne, I went to Perth, and we sort of went our separate ways for a little while, kept in touch sort of as you do, but basically for a fair chunk sort of lost contact. And then he went to leading teams, was doing some learning development PD stuff. He was involved with Fremantle for a couple of years. We hooked back up, and then he was out in the corporate space doing these presentations, the leading team sort of feedback, accountability, values, behavioural framework. That was where he thought, you know, he was getting asked a lot about his experiences from elite sport and how, you know, team dynamics and high performance work. And so he literally texted a few of his mates and said, do you think you can turn up to this session with Bendigo Bank or, you know, the NAB or whoever? And so they were like, yeah, okay, no worries. And then he thought, well, how do people access athletes or talent?
Yep.
There's no real system to do that. You either have to know them individually or you need to know a manager or an agent. And so what he quickly realised that this was quite a fragmented.
Super fragmented.
And really challenging space to understand. So his concept when we first sat down, and the other bit was, you know, he came from the player side that post-retirement, having a network, going to events, being in front of others to, you know, speak about job opportunities post-retirement was really important, which obviously being involved with the PA was important to me. So we sat down and we just started mapping out, well, how could this work?
Yep.
What could this look, whether it's a particular event, speaking engagement, a skills clinic, networking, social media engagement, whatever it looks like.
Yep.
Brand ambassadorship. How could we create a marketplace, a two-sided marketplace?
Yep.
Like all the traditional platforms that have been really successful, that facilitates all these transactions in an automated, more efficient way.
Yeah. So to put that marketplace technology in that space to say, correct, I'm a brand, I want to engage an athlete in some way, but I don't know which one.
Yeah.
I don't know what their budget is, and that's a lot of the how does it, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
How do I get Pav to speak at my corporate function or turn up to my kid's birthday, right? All of those things in between.
And so over the last 3 years you talked about it, sort of the pivots and the changes and the different iterations of the business. So, you know, we sort of pulled together some money from some mums and dads and that kind of type of stuff and got going and always had this online platform as the end goal. But we've now done sort of over 1,000 connections. And what we've found out is that people don't necessarily we thought they would come to us and say, we want a Nathan Fyfe, a Scott Pendlebury,
Archie
Thompson, Sam Kerr, or whoever it is to turn up.
Yeah.
But what we've found is that it's, well, not really. They have an event, they have a brief, yep. and they have a budget. But, you know, the discoverability of, oh, look, I can actually get,
yeah,
I can get someone else. I didn't realise that Andrew Bogut was possible.
Yes.
I didn't realise that, you know, Luke Longley, okay, he's still involved and he's still keen to get, you know, so that type of stuff is been quite interesting. And the other bit is obviously I come from the AFL world where you know, there's a bit of a, I guess, a floor to get an athlete to turn up. But what we found is that it's not necessarily the budget that is the most important. We know a lot of high-profile athletes out there that we've had examples where the opportunity is two streets away. It's half what they would normally accept, but because it's for a good cause and they know the person.
Yep.
And it's at 7:30 on a Thursday night, they can duck out from home, do the event and come back within an hour.
Yeah.
They're prepared to do it.
Yeah.
So it's really sort of, I guess, like most disruptors in some ways, it started pretty much in a lower end market.
Yeah.
You know, our average budget or average appearance is more like the $2,500-$3,000.
Yeah.
There's been people that have done things for $50 or $100 because they're really passionate with the athletes.
Yep.
Right through to, you know, bigger brand ambassador stuff worth $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. So it's been really interesting. And now that the tech is finally in place.
It's finally matching the vision of hey, this is, you know, which is always the, it's always, you know, you draw it on the napkin, you go, this is where we want to go. And you bring in your geeks and you go, really, it's going to take us this long and this many versions. But like it is, you know, now that you can go, type, you know, location, budget, and that kind of thing.
This is my shortlist. You can build your shortlist, and you know, I didn't realize, you know, Joel Selwood and Archie Thompson and you know, Caitlin Bassett, you know, sort of whoever the athletes were. I'd be interested to see if they'd accept that. And so you send that off. The athlete gets notified, and the athlete within 5 seconds can say, "Yeah, I'm available for next Thursday night for half an hour to attend a skills clinic or whatever it is." And so then the person, the client gets notified straight away that, Sam Kerr can attend next Thursday. We'll be in touch with the details.
And that's the thing. I think the first time I caught up with Begs and that was, you know, it was around, hey, booking people for a sporto, a sportsman's night or a corporate function and that kind of stuff, which is, you know, that is the stock standard. That has been the stock standard for many years.
Absolutely.
You know, getting someone to speak at a footy club or, you know, Tommy Hafey has still been running training sessions on Thursdays pretty much at a footy club every week, right? So that's what, you know, that's where it was initially pitched. Yep. And that's, you know, and then, but then the widening of it, you know, having, having someone do the best man speech because they can't do it.
Some of the stuff we've been asked has been quite, you know, incredible. Yeah, best man speech, bar mitzvahs, birthdays. Like just it's really blown our mind about what's possible and what people and athletes are willing to connect on. So it's been – and, you know, at the moment, you know, our view is that you can't – excuse me, you can't be all things to all people.
Yep.
So we wanted to start in sport. Yeah, we've got over 800 athletes on our site, but at some stage, because we do get asked about, oh, do you have any comedians? Do you have any bands? Do you have any CEOs? Do you have any media personalities? So we've worked with a number of those other verticals, and we think that's where the business can develop. But in the initial phase, it's the start in sport because that's where we're strong.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what the guys were saying, like, you know, I do, you know, speaking and MC work and that kind of stuff. And they said, well, you're in the sports space. We can put you on the platform.
Absolutely.
And they can go, yep, we want Sports Geek to host and we'll have two people as a panel and I'll interview them and then boom, you've got your event.
Exactly.
And it's all there on the platform.
Yeah, look, it's, you know, the possibilities we believe are quite endless here. We don't want to, you know, we sort of waited for a few years for – As we said, there's been some fits and starts and it's been challenging in many ways like all startups, but we're quite excited about what the next 18 months looks like.
Yeah, and especially it also comes down to that word of mouth of the players. Like once, you know, once both the current players say, hey, this fits into my schedule, you know, and I've worked with a lot of women footballers and things like that, they go, hey, here's an opportunity to, you know, get more salary, you know, get more revenue in because they're, you know, they're not paid the high salaries and it's a really good revenue generator for them.
Absolutely. That's what, you know, I've been gobsmacked by netballers, basketballers. In Australia at least, it's, I guess, for want of a better term, it doesn't sound too complementary, but it's the second tier sports, you know, that aren't the profile of AFL or NRL or cricket.
Yep.
But that second tier, the athletes are so keen.
Yeah. They're hungry.
So revenue, but also networking and opportunity. So we think we're actually doing a really cool thing for athletes. And it's just creating that marketplace where people can connect.
And it's a thin edge of the wedge for them. Like, they get in and do one or two gigs, and then it becomes a bigger piece. It might become a brand ambassador piece or what that kind of thing.
And so we've been asked about that. You know, how do you feel if, you know, the NAB want to do a particular deal with an athlete? It's like, yeah, no worries. Like, so they should. It's fantastic.
It's your success story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they go, if you build a relationship with a brand or a fan and you find a job or you have a – that's what it's about. That's the connection that we're trying to achieve.
Yep. Couple of things. There's a lot of discussion in the game of AFL at the minute. The state of the game. A part of it, I think, is also the fact that there's just the media wants to have, it's the cycle. Where do you see the game at the minute?
Look, I see a fair bit of footy, more so than when I was playing, which is hard to believe.
Were you a footy head? Were you watch all the games when you were playing?
No, I would always try to tune into one or two games a weekend, but I wasn't like if I saw a part of a game, that's great.
Yeah.
You
wanted to step away. You had enough footy while you're at the club. Yeah.
It's a bit like, if you're an accountant, you come home and you do a bit more accounting.
Yeah.
So sometimes you need to keep it at work. So, whether it's to do with the new Optus Stadium in Perth or I've seen some unbelievable games of footy this year. So both the Showdown and the Derby.
Yep.
Showdown was a kick and the Derby was 8 points.
Yep. Like,
brilliant games of footy, packed houses and just really free-flowing, hard games. Obviously seen a couple of average ones, but it's probably not unusual in a year of footy. I've walked away – more so thinking, wow, that was a good game of footy. I really enjoyed working on that event. That was cool. And so, when there's all this hyperbole around the game and the congestion, it's like, I see that at times, but it's a bit counter to my view on what I've seen.
Yeah.
Whether that's just because I've been fortunate to work on games that have been pretty exciting and pretty open. And so I get where the game has evolved so much and it looks so different to what it did 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I understand that. But I get a bit I think it's convenient and easy to go, the game's no good and it looks shit ass. It's hang on a second.
But it's also the fact that the players, have changed. Like, they're bigger, faster, stronger, hitting harder, running, rotation, like they're running faster for longer. And so it's that gut busting, endurance, that makes it and that's a bit where I think AFL is the best game live. Like, I think TV
doesn't do
it justice at all, because you don't get to see, the 150 meter runs that Jack Riewoldt has to make up and back, and he doesn't get the ball.
Yeah.
Right. But he has to do that for the structure of the game and that kind of thing.
So that's a really good point. I have a view that the game is broadcast too close. That the soccer view, how they sort of pan out to that. It's hard to make out exactly
who's who,
but you get a much broader sense of who's running, what the patterns look like, what the structure of the ground is. I think sometimes we need to pan out a bit, but
I think that's media is changing.
Sure.
So I think that, the whole choose your camera type of setup.
Yep.
That's like, if it's not already, it's coming.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. And I think that's where potentially there is innovation to say, well, this is how you say it, see it.
So to talk, I think you're right. There's always innovation with the media, but and how the consumer's going to watch or view their sport. I think the game, like, we shouldn't just rest on our laurels. Like, there has been a shift in the game, and I don't want to contradict myself in sense of I've seen some great games of footy recently, but we do have to always think about how can we innovate, how can we make it better, how can we revert it back to what it did look like.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to do.
Yeah, it's putting the genie back in the box, the bottle. You
correct.
Can't do it. Yeah.
So, people talk about rotations. People talk about 16 a side. There's all this talk around zoning. So, in the start of a centre square bounce, having six forwards and six defenders in the forward 50. I think all of that can work, but we need it. and I've sort of been a strong advocate for this for a long time. We need a genuine, speaking of America, a genuine second tier competition where we control these things.
Yeah.
So instead of it just going into the NAB Cup or into the AFL system straight away, we do need a genuine second tier comp that we can say, okay, these are the trends we're seeing in the elite game. So let's trial it for, yes, they do it in the SNFL a little bit and the VFL, but it's just different. We need another league to be able to trial these things.
It is funny because like literally this weekend they're running with an extra umpire. Like during a mid-season, which is a strange one. But I do like, and I guess the conversation's happening in AFL. I'm a big NBA guy.
Sure.
In the changes that have happened in the NBA, like Steph Curry comes in, completely changes the game. Hits the three-pointers. Now everyone hits three-pointers and now the floor's spaced. Opens everything up. No one's going inside. And, you know, for a year or two, everyone goes, this is amazing. And then a year later, they're like, hang on, everyone just keeps shooting threes.
Yeah.
And the game evolves, the players evolve. They are talking about things, silly things like changing the size of the court because the athletes are too big. But it's like, no, you don't have to.
Yeah.
10-foot rims, same size court, like evolve.
It's the unintended consequences that like people think of when a rule change comes in or there's an evolution. It's like, oh, how good's this? Or this will stop that. It's like, well, hang. But what about? Yeah, have we actually thought about what that means on the other end? What's the consequence that we don't think about because we either choose not to think about it, or we're just not aware of something that may happen if you do change something. So, I'm with you. I think let thing evolve. Like, it's okay that a few games aren't that good to watch.
Yeah,
like it's.
We just never saw them in the 80s, those games.
Correct. They weren't on TV. Exactly right. I mean, my other view is that the season should be shortened to everyone just plays everyone once.
Yep.
And so you put a premium on the games.
Yep.
That's
a hard one to unwind with all the broadcasters paying the money, but again.
Completely. Yep. I mean, but if you were starting it again, you would only play each other, like the NFL.
Like the
model,
NFL, yeah.
Well, they don't even play everyone once, but there's a premium on the games. There's you don't see some of the poorer teams playing each other back into the year where the game doesn't mean anything. So, I think there's continue to innovate, but be aware of what you're trying to achieve.
Well, there's always 18 guys and their staff working overtime to work out whatever advantage of the rules there are anyway.
Correct.
The coaches always work away. So I know you've got to get going. You've got to head to a game at Etihad Stadium, soon to be named next year Marvel Stadium.
Marvel Stadium.
So I look forward to seeing you in a Hulk costume and a Fox footy when it comes out. Finish with the Sports Geek closing five.
Yes.
Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do. My dad was and my uncles played in the SNFL. They played for West Torrens, and so I was at Theberton Oval where West Torrens played. Since I was a tiny kid, and dad was a coach, and so I remember running around the tables of the Theberton club rooms with West Torrens. So I remember seeing a game. One of the first memories I have is running out to dad at halftime at Theberton Oval.
Yep.
When he was coaching. So.
Very good, very good. Way back when. Now that you're no longer a footballer and you get to go to sports events around the world, do you have a favorite food memory?
I remember going to a few NFL games recently and, sitting there because it was so cold, it was snowing in New York one day, snowing where your feet were.
At MetLife.
Yeah, at MetLife. And going to get a Captain Morgan's rum, because I thought, well, that might warm me up.
Yep.
And a big pretzel.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool.
Very, very much a New York experience.
Very much a New York experience. And now that I'm I work at football games, there's often some party pies and sausage rolls. So I try to avoid them, but I must admit to indulging.
Well,
you
don't have to worry about skin folds and things like that these days.
I have to worry about my wife looking at me.
This is true. This is true. What's the first app you open in the morning?
I was going to – the first app, I often look at the weather because
– But you're in Perth. It's the same every day.
Yeah. Good point. I shouldn't worry about that. Perth is beautiful for weather. The first app I open, it's going to sound – but probably Twitter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's fine. That's a valid answer.
There's news. There's a bit of trash. You just got to get
what's happened.
Yeah,
or you wake up and you find it. When the World Cup's on. Who won?
What's
the score?
Exactly.
That kind of thing. Is there someone that you'd suggest that the podcast listeners should follow? Someone you read or you've been consuming?
I just think about the books I've read recently. I mentioned Malcolm Gladwell before. Some of his books are pretty cool, Outliers and a number of others. But I read Phil Knight's book, Shoe Dog.
Yep.
Recently. And
it's in my Amazon. Read it soon.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well worth a read, particularly for those that are interested in startups and business and all that, and sport, obviously. And the other one that I'm reading right now is called The Four Tendencies.
Okay.
By Gretchen Rubin, who talks about, it's personality traits and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm quite interested in reading. And those two guys, both Phil Knight and Gretchen Rubin, are someone I've been interested in lately.
Terrific, terrific. Last question. What social media platform is your MVP? What's your go-to one?
It's hard to pass Instagram, unfortunately. I mean, I use Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Yep.
They're the three ones I mainly use. I don't engage a huge amount with Facebook just because, really. I guess Instagram is so powerful and it's so addictive.
Yep. Yeah, you're just there for – you find out, I've been here for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's why you can't. Like, as much as you try to put the phone down or not, but it's engaging. It's hard to, it's very addictive. So that would probably be the standout.
Thank you very much for coming. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to send you a tweet to say they've listened or find out what you're doing?
Yeah. So obviously my Twitter handle and is at MattPav29, and Instagram's Mav29. Pickstar, obviously, www.pickstar.com.au if you want to engage with a sports star or athlete anywhere in the world. And I guess what we're really excited to do, whether it's my own business journey or I guess my media roles, is to really engage with people. Like, it's sort of for a long time, I think I did sort of hold my cards a bit too close to my chest. So now, being on the other side with a bit more freedom, it's actually nice to speak your own opinion, but at the same time, re-engage with the fans.
Yeah, well, that's right. You now get to talk without someone like a PR manager or an agency. Can't say that. Thank you very much for coming to the pod.
It's been great to be here.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sean. Cheers.
Join sports executives from around the world at sportsgeeknation.com.
Thanks again to my guest, Matthew Pavlich. You can send him a tweet. He's starting to get a bit more active in social now. He is not playing footy, at MattPav29. So send him a tweet. Tell him what you thought of the pod. Fire him with any questions. As he said on the podcast, he's got a role with Pickstar, if you're interested in that as a platform. And also he's part of PMI Group. Which is in the sports technology space as well. So send him a tweet or connect with him on LinkedIn. As always, the show notes will have links to all the ways you can connect with Pav and check out Pickstar. So simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/202. Also a shout out to my brother, Matt Callinan, who has a lot of things in common with Matthew Pavlich. He has a very similar Twitter handle. So send him a tweet, MattCal29, because he was also born on New Year's Eve. But unfortunately, Matt, just a little bit less talent than Matthew Pavlich. So thank you very much for listening. For those of you who have not yet taken up Sports Geek Nation, the launch date is fast approaching. If you have not heard about it, you can go to sportsgeeknation.com/foundation. So the foundation membership is now open, which will give you lifetime access to the Sports Geek Slack, Sports Geek Nation Slack. So the Sports Biz Slack will be rebuilt. I've also got the Sports Geek Nation Facebook group to sort of give two different communities. If you haven't joined that yet, you're more than welcome to sportsgeeknation.com/Facebook group, and that'll go in there. I did my first Facebook Q&A video where I sort of reviewed a few of the things. That's available. It's sitting there in the group. I've also exported it to YouTube for the few people that aren't on Facebook. So we've shared that in the Slack as well. We'll be starting up the monthly emails on July 15 upon launch. So the foundation members will get that. They'll get what you've missed, some of the member profiles, those kind of things, and also the downloads. You should be able to access all of the downloads of the guides, the free guides that we're offering as part of Foundation membership, and also the presentation. So my recent presentation in Queensland, that's available. You simply go to your memberful account /downloads and you can download them. So for the people who have already signed up, thank you very much. Absolutely humbled by the response. I'm really thrilled with the fact that both podcast listeners and podcast guests are signing up. So guests like Daniel Brew at the Warriors, Todd Kaflisch, now at Tech Foundry, Stacey McGrainer from the San Jose Sharks, and even last week's guest, Ryan Caveney from the Giants. Thank you very much for joining Sports Geek Nation as Foundation members. It means a lot to me. But then also people who are joining who I've recently met or I soon to meet. So people like Karen Lunn at the LPGA and Liam Murphy, who's at Calisthenics Victoria. I wanted to put that in just so I could see if I could say Calisthenics. So it's great to see people of in different parts of the world of sport joining in and looking forward to seeing where that goes. So it's going to go live on the 15th. So if you listen to this week when it's gone out, you'll only have days left. So go to sportsgeeknation.com/foundation. You get in on one price, lifetime, never be charged again. And I'd love to see you in there. If you've got any questions, as always, send me a tweet, message me on Slack, ask me a question. I'm more than happy to take them on board at Sean Callanan on all channels. Getting close to my next Sports Geek trip. I'm looking forward to attending my seventh SEAT conference, this time in Dallas. SEAT Dallas looks to be amazing. Looking forward to doing the Digital to Dollars workshop with Jane and Jesper and Zach, going through audience and content distribution, valuation and pitch. Did a couple of workshops with an NRL team this week, and they're getting quite close to the pitch process, and it's been quite good for them to help develop their rate card and have a good understanding from a digital and commercial team's point of view. So I'm really looking forward to starting to shape some of those pitch proposals that they're putting out, and seeing how both their digital and commercial teams sort of work together on that. I look forward to sharing the success stories of that on a future podcast. So I'll be in Dallas for SEAT, arriving there on the Thursday the 19th. So if you're arriving early, please let me know. Most likely what I'm going to try to do in this trip is organize a few meetups in or around the places I'm going to be. Obviously don't need to do that at SEAT because I'll see you all at the conference. And then from the 24th to 26th, I'll be in Philadelphia for Podcast Movement. So I'm thinking about potentially setting up a meetup on the 27th. So if you're in Philadelphia, please let me know what's a good bar, where to go. Thank you very much for Ryan for sending me some suggestions so far. So I'm going to put a date out there and invite some people. So if you're in that part of the world, please let me know. And then the following week, the 28th, the week starting the 28th, I'm going to be in New York. I'm already teeing up a few interviews and meetings and that kind of thing, but looking to potentially set up some sort of meetup, see who I can catch up with in New York before stopping by, do some work in Washington, and then flying back via LA. So if you're in that part of the world, please let me know. I'd love to catch up and meet a few more podcast listeners or Sports Geek Nation members in my travels. So until then, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Foundation pricing available for a short time at sportsgeeknation.com. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best, in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.